You're listening to Drive Time Sports on KOAL AM 750, the play-by-play home of the USU Eastern Eagles.
The college basketball season is now complete. We're going to recap last night's national championship contest and the previous NCAA tournament, which went by in a flash. Joining us right now to talk a bit about that, we have Greg Peterson, who was kind enough to join us throughout the tournament. Of course, you can hear Greg on Sirius XM Radio, co-host of the March to Madness, and now the March Madness is all wrapped up. Greg, a pleasure to get you on the show today. Thank you.
Always a pleasure. Thank you, Jordan. Feels like just a couple weeks ago we were talking about Utah in the non-conference slate, and now it's all over.
Yeah, I can't believe it, how fast the season actually went by. But let's start by talking about last night's contest. Greg, I don't want to sound like that guy that says, I knew this was coming, because, look, all of us have our faults as far as our bracket go. But when you take a look at the national championship matchup last night, I could not find a redeeming quality for Michigan that led me to believe that they could actually hang with Villanova and come out on top last night. To me, it was very predictable. I thought that Villanova would control the majority of the second half, and with about, 10, 9, 8 minutes left, they would push this to a double-digit lead that would just be instrumental, and that's exactly what happened. I mean, just too much firepower from this Villanova squad.
There was one chance for Michigan. Mo Wagner got up to a really nice start, and I thought that if there was one player that could cause Villanova some issues, it would be Mo Wagner. I mean, he hits that deep three. They go down low to him a couple times. He gets a bunch of easy points. Michigan goes up by 7 points. That's the only point in the game where I thought, hey, Michigan has a chance. But Villanova quickly neutralized that. Dante DiVincenzo took over the game. And once Villanova went on that big 25-7 run in the first half, you knew this game was over.
You mentioned Dante DiVincenzo, who was, again, phenomenal. 31 points, 5 rebounds, 3 assists in this game, a record for a bench player in the national championship contest. That's just proof of the type of firepower that Villanova has. He's not the only guy capable of doing this on the team either.
No, not at all. I mean, Jalen Brunson is the national player of the year, for goodness sake. He's a guy that averages over 19 points, 4 assists, shoots over 40% from distance. Mikal Bridges had a very nice season himself. You've got players up and down this roster. Omari Spellman, Phil Booth was the hero in the national championship 2 years ago when he came off the bench for 20-plus. So, I mean, Villanova just top to bottom, a loaded team. And when they're hitting their threes, and Dante DiVincenzo was doing all of that for Villanova last night, this team is just almost insurmountable.
As far as Villanova's route to the national championship goes, and I think this is a relevant conversation just because we were talking so much about, like, Kentucky. You know, had they gotten past Kansas State, their route to the Final Four would have been a cakewalk. In comparison to, we'll say, Michigan, when you take a look at the competition that Villanova had to play over the past 2.5-3 weeks, what did you take? What was your take on their competition and the route they had to go to get there?
I thought they had to play a bunch of unique teams. I mean, Kansas is a team that plays much like them, in which they bomb threes. They had to play, I thought, the biggest matchup nightmare in the NCAA tournament in West Virginia, because you only have a couple days to prepare for a team that goes at you full court press for 40 minutes. So, I mean, I thought that the fact that they were able to get by in that game and win by double digits was unique. They played a team that put the clamps down on you on defense in Texas Tech. So this team had a little bit of everything thrown at them. Heck, even in their first round game against Radford is a team that's in the bottom 10 in the nation in regards to pace of play. So they had to play much slower in that game than normal, and they were just able to beat them at that game, too. So I felt like Villanova had a much tougher road, and Michigan was the first team to ever make the national championship without ever having to play a top-5 seed. I thought that was interesting.
They beat Radford by 26. They beat Alabama by 23. They beat West Virginia by 12. They beat Texas Tech by 12. I mean, every game in this tournament, they won by double digits. It's a landslide over Kansas, and then they dominate Michigan yesterday. The toughest challenge had to have been West Virginia, right?
I think so. I mean, I actually thought West Virginia was going to win that game in my bracket, but once they got past West Virginia, I'm just like, I don't think that there are any challengers that are going to be able to put up a fight against Villanova. I thought West Virginia was that one team just because they are so unique in their defense. They do have so many guys that come at you. They play like turkeys with their heads cut off. I mean, it's absolutely insane. Once they got through that game, I thought it was Villanova's tournament to lose, and it turned out to be that.
Let's talk about Jay Wright and what this means for Jay Wright. I mean, obviously, this is a team that plays a brand of basketball that has a lot of success in the NBA. I mean, again, it's that type of offense. You don't have to have a legitimate big. You can stretch the four with a stretch four. That's exactly what Jay Wright does. This is the brand of basketball that has kind of caught fire in the NBA as of late. I remember talking to Bobby Bowden about, boy, it's been 4 or 5 years ago here on the show. One of the things that he said always stuck with me. It was when Florida State won their first national championship. And I said, what's the big problem? What's next for Jimbo Fisher? What's a hurdle that he's going to have to climb? And he said, well, everyone's going to offer him a job. Jay Wright is now that guy. I don't know if he was before last night, but he definitely is now. People are going to come calling for Jay Wright. What are the odds that this guy stays at Villanova long term?
I think that there are actually pretty good odds. I mean, this is a guy that actually went to college at Bucknell, which is located in the state of Pennsylvania, so he has great fondness for the area. And let's face it, we've seen a lot of guys make the leap from college to the NBA, and they haven't had success. I mean, John Calipari couldn't do it, and we've seen how John Calipari has done in college. And he led UMass and Memphis to the Final Four, for goodness sakes. I mean, granted, some of those were vacated, but we will just ignore that fact. But I mean, there are so many guys that have went to the NBA. They haven't been successful. I do feel like the recent success of some coaches in the NBA going from college, I mean, mainly from Florida, I'm forgetting Billy Donovan.
Billy Donovan, yeah.
Who went from Florida to the NBA with the Thunder. He's had some success, but past that, I mean, there just aren't a lot of guys that have done it. And, I mean, he had the good fortune of being in Oklahoma City, a team that has been making the playoffs year after year after year. I mean, if Jay Wright were to go to the NBA, who would he be taking over in? Memphis? Phoenix? I mean, those are just not very appealing places, so I think he'll be sticking around at Villanova for a while.
Yeah, I think Brad Stevens is another guy that you could talk about that had success in college into the NBA, but even that feels different because I don't know that Brad Stevens was ever truly a college coach, if that makes sense. Jay Wright's a college coach.
Yeah, I agree with you there. And, I mean, the fact that he went to the Celtics, too, that helped out Brad Stevens a little bit more as well. It's all about the fit because, I mean, let's throw out there a good but not great team. The Portland Trailblazers, that's a perfect example. I mean, if Jay Wright were offered a job by the Portland Trailblazers, I think he would take that. I mean, I think he would take that much more so than, say, the Memphis Grizzlies, who's right now just tanking like crazy, hoping to get a top draft pick. I mean, it's all about the fit.
Again, we're being joined right now by Greg Peterson as we break down the college basketball tournament season, which came to a close. Greg, I got to get your thoughts on this. I know you're a men's fanatic as far as college basketball goes, one of the best college basketball minds I know. With that being said, I said on the show yesterday, the women's Final Four was much more entertaining than the men's.
Oh, yeah. I mean, without a doubt. Now, you had a good slate for the Final Four for the men's because you had a Cinderella. You had 2 1-seeds. You had a blue blood in Michigan. I mean, you can only pick 4 teams, so there's only so many storylines that you can get. But the games themselves were so much better. I mean, you had a Goomba Wally for Notre Dame hitting the game winner in the national championship and the Final Four game against UConn. You cannot beat that. And you had an actual upset, too. So, I mean, I will have to agree with you. The Final Four on the women's side, much, much more entertaining.
From an individual standpoint on the men's side, which player helped their draft stock out the most during the NCAA tournament? Does one come to mind?
Mo Wagner, without a doubt. I mean, he was a guy that many people thought was going to be more of a mid to late second round pick. Actually, probably not a late second rounder, but more in the mid second round range. Now I think that there's no doubt that he's a first rounder, and I think that he is gone. I mean, if Dante DiVincenzo really wants to leave too, he's not going to have a game better than that. On the biggest stage in college basketball, he came off the bench, he had 31 points, and he completely took over that tournament game. So, I mean, he certainly helped it out. Jalen Brunson as well. I mean, we were talking about this before the tournament of guys that could really help themselves out. Villanova winning the title really looks good on Jalen Brunson, and the fact that he got the Player of the Year honor certainly is not going to hurt either. So, I think that those players helped themselves. And if he wants to go to the NBA too, take a look at a guy who only played one game, but Mike Dom of South Dakota State. He was very impressive in that game against Ohio State. He's a 6'10", 240-pound big man that's able to shoot threes at an over 40% clip. Guy does a little bit of everything. I think that if you're an NBA team, you're looking for a second round flyer, a guy that can make your roster and still can play in the NBA as it is today. Mike Dom is a very good player.
I think that I personally think Brunson is the only player that's going to go in the first round. But you bring up Mo Wagner, and here's a kid that's, what, 6'11", 6'10", can hit the outside shot. I think you've seen steady improvement over his last 3 years at Michigan, and that accounts for something, obviously. But it seems like scouts really try to stray away from kids who are going into their senior year or junior year. They love these one-and-dones. They love these kids that leave after their sophomore year. To me, that works against Wagner. I think he's a borderline first-rounder, definitely helped his draft stock. Maybe it's one of those astronomical climbs, a kid that maybe wasn't going to get drafted at all, climbs into the early portion of the second round, but that's kind of the way I view Wagner.
Yeah, I think that he's a late first-rounder personally just because he does have the size. He was a little bit more of a developmental player, and he's obviously come on strong. And just his size and being able to shoot threes, that combination, it's going to bode well in the NBA. He's not going to be like a starter right off the bat or anything like that, but I do think that he does find a way to go into the late first round, even though we know that this draft is very loaded with guys like Ayton, Bagley, the list goes on and on.
Yeah, Ayton, Bagley, Porter, you know, we talk about Jaren Jackson, Trey Young, Colin Sexton, Wendell Carter. I mean, we're talking about young kids that are going to be riddled throughout the top 10.
Yeah, I mean, this draft is completely insane. So many people are asking, why are so many of these NBA teams tanking? Well, there's your answer right there. If you get any of those, like, top 8 picks, you're looking at possibly getting a guy that can completely transcend your franchise. I think that this draft is very similar to the one in 2003. Now, I don't think anyone becomes LeBron James or anything like that, but, I mean, you've just got quality throughout that entire lottery portion of the draft.
Definitely a lot of moments like that, I think, throughout this tournament. As far as the entertainment value goes front to back, it was by far leaps and bounds better than what we saw last year. I don't think there's any comparison.
I think that last year's tournament was less upsets, but I do think we had a bunch of good entertaining games because what we saw last year were a bunch of games in like that round of 32, Sweet 16, that you knew that a team was going to make a run at some point because it felt like every game last year, a team would get down by, say, 15 points, and then boom, they pull off a 14-2 run, and you've got a three-point game all of a sudden. That's what last year's NCAA tournament provided. This year's tournament provided more outright upsets, but those upsets were big, giant blowouts. I mean, Texas A&M mopping the floor with UNC. UMBC winning by 20 against Virginia. I mean, the list goes on and on. So I thought that we had more blowouts, but we had more upsets this year as well.
So let me ask you this. Did the best team in the country win the national championship this year?
I do think so. When it's all said and done, Villanova was in the top 5 the entire year. They did have a head-scratching loss to St. John's in Big East play. They did lose at Creighton once as well. But, I mean, past that, Villanova has really been one of the best teams in the country throughout the entire year. I mean, this is a team that was built on junior and senior leadership, though. You did obviously have some younger players at DiVincenzo. Amari Spellman is a freshman, but I do think that the best team won the national championship this year.
Greg, before I let you go, please let the listeners know where they can find more of your work.
You can find me on Twitter at GUnit_81. I'm the host of the March to Madness, which, now that the madness is done, is going to be scaled back quite a bit. So that's unfortunate, but always on SiriusXM Channel 204. I do a little bit more than college basketball as well, so you'll be seeing me do a little baseball, do a little NHL, things like that. So it's going to be a lot of fun. @GUnit_81 is the Twitter handle for all that.
Greg, I always appreciate the time. Thank you again for joining us on the show today, and I know we'll talk again soon.
Jordan, always a pleasure. Thank you.
We've got a break for just a moment, but we do have more Drive Time Sports coming up. When we return, we're going to flip back over to the NFL here on this Tuesday edition of the show.